You know, I think the first time I ever heard about cybersecurity or thought that it was something that we had to pay attention to was back in the days of Nortel being based in North Texas. They spun off a company called Intrust, and we used to catch up with their CEO, their first CEO, Bill Connor, right regularly. He would just give us frightening stories about bad actors and what they were doing, and they're still doing it. Todd Wilkinson has been CEO for the last 17 years, but he's turning over the keys to Tony Ball, who joins us right now. It's good to have you with us.
Thanks, David. Yeah, I actually know Bill Connor from those days, so I'm sure I heard similar war stories as you did on the cybersecurity front.
Well, but it never gets any better. I mean, the suggestion, and Bill used to tell us that, you know, there are, I don't know, three companies that have been hacked, companies that know they've been hacked, and companies that don't know they've been hacked. I mean, everybody's been hacked, and it never gets any better.
It's so true. It's not a question of if, it's just when. Those cyber threats are continuing. Fraud is probably as aggressive as it's ever been. Bad actors taking advantage of vulnerabilities in all access points across infrastructure. And that's something that keeps me up at night, that's for sure.
Well, but it pays the bills, I guess, too. So you just try to mitigate it or contain it, or at least I know when you've been hacked?
Well, to your point, one is, do you know you've been hacked, or do you anticipate you're going to be hacked? Our job is, we're trying to get ahead as much as we can of fraudsters, but they're just getting more sophisticated. Deep fakes, injection attacks. They're using biometric attributes, they're using fake documents, anything that they can get their hands on, and they move quickly. So we're trying to get ahead of that. We try to use AI and other tools to predict where they're actually going to head next.
But who are they? Are they state sponsored primarily, or is this espionage, or are we talking about ransom? You know, we hear that all the time. They took, I think, some of the city of Dallas and held its data for ransom and looking for trade secrets. Who are these bad actors?
You've covered the broad spectrum of them.
So it's all of the above?
All of the above. But I would say to you, the forces have no nationality, okay? They essentially are not from one location. They move in a cyber world. They move very quickly. They move in rings. And once they see an attack vector, it's a bit like seeing an ant that finds something good and brings the swarm in. And then suddenly you're overtaken by ants. Fraud rings work in exactly the same way. Find something, capitalize on it, and then move on.
You know, coming back to the consumer, read that as me. I've been very excited about this idea of digital currencies and digitalization, and that, you know, instead of MasterCard or American Express or Visa and charging 1%, 2%, or 3% on a transaction, it's digital and I buy something and bam, they've got the money and it's done and the transaction is done. I find that appealing until I realize that I have recourse. If I charge something and I don't get it, or if I buy an airline ticket and they go bust before I get on the airplane, I can call MasterCard and say, you know, give me my money back, and they will. But what happens in a digital world?
Well, the same is true in the digital world, that you will get your money back, but an awful lot of that is based on the profile of you as a consumer. It's much easier if you're a higher net worth, high transaction volume type individual versus somebody who transacts infrequently. But in the digital world, if you're using a digital payment vehicle versus a physical payment vehicle, you're still going to get the support that you would expect to get. Now, your point rightfully is, as you look at some of these emerging currencies, crypto, and you look at some of the risks that they incorporate as they're forming, norming, and storming in the legitimacy of these payment rails, it's not quite as clear as it would be in your traditional payment rails.
You operate all over the world. Last I saw was 150 countries or something. But
yeah.
Are there heat maps that you look at where there was more activity in one area or one country than another? And does it move around?
In the context of fraud?
Right.
Yeah. So as I was saying earlier, right, they don't necessarily think of themselves as attacking a particular country. They look at where the vulnerability is. So heat maps in that regard, you're going to see that in the large financial centers of the world. You're going to see that traditionally in the US. You're going to see that in the UK. You're going to see that in mainland Europe. But what they do is they take documents that are easy to fake and they'll come in. It could be a Hong Kong passport, an Australian ID card. It could be a Venezuelan vehicle registration card. And once they've got an attack vector, they capitalize on it and use it as frequently as they can.
There's some concern that's been expressed now about using facial ID, where they're using it here, for security, TSA and others. And it's a lot more convenient than whipping out a passport if you could just smile and, walk on through. But then they've got, then the concern is, well, they've got your face. They've got your social security number. They've got all your data. And then they've got everything. Is that an area of concern?
It should be an area of concern for consumers if you're not using what I would call next generation biometric technology. And when we talk about face, to your point, when you're able to use your face in motion, being able to follow guidelines that give you the opportunity to, say, open a high street bank account or to apply for a visa. If you're using biometric motion detection and we're in a position to use machine learning, we can anticipate your movement. So these are the things that actors will try and replicate, but this is where you try very much and stay ahead of the game. And I can do that better with dynamic environments than I can with static environments. A document's static.
A document is static. So tell me about your next 17 years as CEO of Intrust. Where do you take the company? What's next?
Well, first of all, 17 years is an incredible run as a CEO. And good for Todd. He went out on his terms with full support for the board. I wish Todd well in his retirement. He's earned it. From my vantage point, I'm going to keep doing this as long as I can because I'm excited by the prospect, as you rightly point out. Entrust is in just such an important space here. Identity matters to us as consumers, as citizens, as workforce members. And giving consumers the freedom to act, being able to assert your identity, to be able to go about your business with confidence. That's the growth story for Entrust in an identity-centric world, trying to get ahead of the fraudsters, trying to get ahead of the cyber threats, and helping people feel safe and also protecting your data and protecting your devices. That's where my excitement comes from.
So once you put up, some protection, do you go in and try to hack the people that you've just worked for just to see if it works?
Well, what we do is we utilize data and we use machine learning techniques to essentially set up identities from which we then internally look at the attack vectors and
Right.
the vulnerabilities to try to anticipate where fraudsters are going to go next. So
I'll take that as a yes.
we're trying to get ahead of what the next actor is going to do.
Well, good. I'm glad somebody out there is doing it because I certainly can't. I get spoofed all the time. Tony Ball is the incoming CEO of Intrust Corporation. It's good to spend some time with you. We wish you all the luck of the world.
Thanks, David.
Thanks.
Really enjoyed it.
Well, we won't wait 17 years to talk. For more of our conversation, go to KRLD.com/CEO. David Johnson, News Radio 1080 KRLD.